Welcome to Hebrew Club. We are on 1 Samuel chapter 13, and I wanted to thank Tom for doing it last week for me, and he'll do it next week too, because I'm going to Poland. Oh no, I'll be able to do it next week, but I'll be able to do it next Thursday, then the following Thursday I'll be out the 16th, so Tom's going to help me again, so I appreciate that. He said you got through, what, verse 14 did you say? There was a question about the perfect form in verse 13. Remember that Hakeen that Tom asked me to kind of talk about a little. And actually, the more I thought about this and looked up some stuff, the more interesting this whole section became. So I'll give you a solution. I think that what we are seeing here is an example of archaic meanings coming into play with the perfect tense. You will see the perfect, as you know, the perfect is often used for kind of a straight future, but it also occurs in conditionals. And I have a couple other examples of this for you. And there is also a few places in which you actually see a past progressive meaning for a perfect. And one scholar that I read, one linguist who's done a lot of work on this, suggests that that too is an indication of an archaic meaning that you still see in very kind of restricted context. But I would suggest to you that if you go all the way back to verse 11, there's a possibility for that. Remember when Saul decided to offer the sacrifice, and he did it because of what was happening to the what was happening as he was waiting for Samuel. In verse 11, remember, Samuel said, "What have you done?" And Saul said, "When I saw that," and now notice you have this perfect, "Nafatzaam," when I saw that the people what? See, if you translate it, had scattered, it kind of doesn't make sense because none of them's there. So, this is really interesting. I looked up the NRSV, the NIV, the NAB, the ESV, and the JPS translations all translate past progressive, were scattering. So when I saw that the people were scattering from me, and you had not come at the time of the day, you know, at the appointed season, and the Philistines were gathered at Michmash, okay, and that's when he made his decision. And so I'm suggesting that one solution here, you see an archaic meaning, and notice that it's in dialogue, it's in direct speech, and both of these occurrences come in kind of this dialogue, direct speech situation where you're more likely to kind of have these forms. And so I would suggest that the same thing happens here in verse 13, and Samuel said to Saul, "You have acted foolishly. You did not keep the charge of the Lord your God, which he commanded you." That you kind of think of this as a suppressed conditional. If you had, kiata, okay, surely now Yahweh would have established your kingdom to Israel forever. Now, there's a few other places so that you see, actually, quite a few places where the perfect is used in the apodosis of conditionals with a would sense, just like this. I listed a number and then I stopped listing because I got too many. But if you just turn to Numbers chapter 22, just so you can see this. I mean, we're seeing some rather unusual uses, so it's worth pointing out here. Numbers chapter 22, verse 29. Notice that this is actually Bilam talking to the donkey. Now, I just want you to notice the structure when we get to the lu here. See, Bilam said to the donkey, "Ki hilat hit alal tebi," something like, "What have you done to me?" or "Look what you've done against me." Lu. Notice that this is a particle for conditions. Okay. If only there was a sword in my hand. Kiata. Notice kind of the structure here. If only there was a sword in my hand, surely now I would have killed you. Okay, so notice you have the kiata and you have this particle lu, which is usually an indication of contrary to fact conditionals. Okay, you see that. Another good example, we'll just look at one more. Genesis chapter 31, verse 42. And like I said, there's numerous other ones. Did I get this right? Oh, verse 42. I'm sorry, I was at 32. Huh. Okay. See, notice again you have this Lu Le Elohe, the God of my fathers. If only the God of my fathers, the God of Abraham, and the Pachad of Isaac was with me. Ki ata, surely now, empty, you would have sent me. See, again you have that shilakti, you would have sent me. Okay? And then it goes on. Alright? So again, there's a number of cases, and a number of other cases I saw have this kiata and that kind of a structure. That's why, you know, you see that first lo there after you have acted foolishly? I'm almost wondering if that should, you know, some people suggest that there's a suppressed conditional, but some might want to make a textual emendation there and say, if only you had kept the commandment of the Lord your God, surely now Yahweh would have established your kingdom forever. See, I don't know if you should make that emendation or not, but I'm suggesting that that's a possibility given the other examples. Alright? So, but as you go on, we'll see another unusual instance in verse 14. See? And now, your kingdom will not rise. Bikesh. Here you have another perfect form, and I would say here you have another archaic meaning, just simply refers to the future. Prophetic speech does this a lot. You're very familiar with it because prophecy and poetry tends to use more archaic forms. So I would just translate that. Yahweh will seek for himself a man according to his own heart, and Yahweh will command him, see, as Nagid, as leader over his people. For you did not keep that which Yahweh commanded you. So I would just go with the future and say, hey, here we're dealing with dialogue, and we're dealing with an instance in which some less common, rarer meanings of the perfect come into play, which you see in other places. Okay, and we'll see if that continues when we get to verse 15 here. Okay, Vayakam Shemuel, then Samuel arose from Qum, Vayal min ha-Gilgal, and he went up from Gilgal. This is again called from Alal, from Gilgal of to Gibeah of Benjamin. Okay, Vayifkod Shaul, and Saul mustered at the people, or numbered the people, those nimzaim, those who were found with him. Again, that's a simple nifal participle used as a substantive. Those who were found with him, about keshesh meot ish, about 600 men. Okay? Any questions on verse 15? That kind of gets us back into the narrative here. Alright, verse 16. Veshaul veYonatan beno veHa'am haNimtza imam Yoshvim beGevah Binyamin uPelishtim Chanu beMikmash. Okay. Now Saul and Jonathan his son, and the people who were found with him. I guess I don't know. Find is not the best translation for that. Although that's how we learn the word. The ones who were, you know, attached to him, were staying. Notice that this is from Yashav. Again, the most common way to indicate progressive action in Hebrew is the participle. You only see the imperfect used for past progressive action in questions in restricted contexts. Alright? Some don't think it exists at all, that meaning exists at all for the imperfect, but I think it does in questions and things like that. But notice, here's the common way with the participle. They were staying in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the Philistines, Chanu, camped at Michmash. That Chanu is from Chana, and Kamanam Machane camp comes from it. Okay? Any questions about that clause? Notice one other thing, that you have this kind of event reporting clause in verse 16, and so you don't have it started with a vav consecutive. It's just remarking about this event, and then it goes on to kind of something else here, another part of the story. So that's why you kind of have that break there. Okay, we had that earlier in the chapter, actually, in verses 4, 5, and 6. So verse 17, Vayetse ha-mashkit mimachane pelashtim shalosha rashim ha-rosh achad yifne el derek ofra el eretz shual. Okay, the mashkit, the raiding party. This is from shachat, to destroy. Alright. So the raiding party went out from the camp of the Philistines. Shalosha Rashim, in three columns. Alright, so in other words, the Philistines are starting to engage in the battle. Harosh Echad, the column one, so the first column. Now notice what form we have. Yifneh. Here we have a prefix form. Right? I would suggest you understand this as a preterite. Again, here you have kind of an archaic meaning for the prefix form. So it's not will turn, but turn to the way to the Ophrah road, the road to Ophrah, to the land of Shual. Okay? V'harosh echad, and another column, one column, Yifneh, turn to the Derek Beit Horon, to the road to Beit Horon, and Harosh Echad, and another column, one column, again, literally, turned to the road, down the road, or to the road of Ha Gevul, of the border, Ha Nishka, that which looks over all the valley of Zevoim, that's the name of it, Ha Midbara, Zevorim, in the desert, or to the desert. The Ha Nishkaf is from the root Shakaf. It's a Nifal participle. And it modifies Ha Gevul, the border, the way of the border road, see, which overlooks the valley of Zevoim, in the desert. Alright, so he's just giving kind of geographical markers as he's going on here. Okay? Verse 19. Here's a little aside. V'charash lo yimatzeh bekol eretz Yisrael. Now, charash, here would be a smith, blacksmith. Blacksmith lo yimatzeh, was not found. Okay, notice again you have an imperfect nifal, third masculine singular. Blacksmith was not found bekol eretz Yisrael, in all the land of Israel. Ki amru, again notice they want you to, this is a Karei Kativ, the consonants tell you that you should read this as a participle or something like that, or third masculine singular, but notice the vowels, they want you to read it as a plural form, amru, alright, because the subject is Pelishtins. For the Philistines said, lest, Ya'asu, lest the Ivrim, lest the Hebrews make Erev, sword, or Chanit, javelin, or spear. See, in other words, the Philistines must have banished all the blacksmiths in Israel. They didn't want them making nuclear weapons against them. Right? I don't know how that worked, again, how they did it, but anyway. Vayerdu kol Yisrael. So all Israel went down from Yarad. So all Israel went down ha-Pelishtim to the Philistines. Liltosh. This is a rare word, actually. I think it's a hapax. To sharpen. Okay, so they had to go to the Philistines in order to sharpen each one, ish, et macharashto. Here we go. Each one his plow, and et eto, and his, another word for some farm implement. Bill, what is it? Mattock or something. His other plow. The et kardumo, and his axe, and Macha Reshato and his, I don't know, some other kind of farm thing, plow. They had to take their stuff to the Philistines to get them sharpened. Okay, these are the instruments. All right. Now here is very interesting. Vehayata, and was hapetzira, the price. Okay, the charge was a peem. So the charge for the sharpening was a peem, which is 2/3 of a shekel. So now you know. A peem is 2/3 of a shekel. Don't ask me how much a shekel is. Whatever. Okay. So 2/3 of a shekel or a peem for macha, here it is, macha ratio for the plows and for the etim, for the mattox and for the shalosh kilshon. Shalosh is 3, kilshon is 4. So for the 3 fork, the pitchforks, see? I love this stuff. It's just kind of local color. And for the kardumim, and for the axes. So 2/3 of a shekel for all those. Now, I don't know, Tom, is that outrageous or not? I don't know. Is it like the price of gas in California? I mean, who knows? What's the going rate? Does he say this because the Philistines were just charging way too much for the sharpening? I have no idea. Someone can look that up and tell me what the going rate for sharpening tools was in ancient Israel. I'd be very happy.
Supply demand says they were charging a lot.
That's right. And here's another one. And also 2/3 of a shekel, lehatziv ha dorban, to set. This is from Natsav. This is a hifil, infinitive construct, to set the goad. Darban is a cattle goad, and evidently it had a metal tip that you stuck the cattle, yeah. So in order to set it and to keep it straight and sharpen it, they charge 2/3 of a shekel. It's great.
Really fun with a stun rod or something.
It's hilarious. Yeah, here you got a full price sheet. I can see it on the store there, the Philistine guys, and these guys are all grumbling, you know. All right. Yeah, so it happened, Bayom Milchamat, the time of the war, see, all the Philistines went out, Velo Nimsa Cherev Vachanit Bayad Kol Ha'am. So it happened at the time of the war. At the time of the war, not was found sword or spear in the hand of any of the people, any of the army. Asher et Shaul, which was with Saul and et Yochanan, and with Jonathan. Vatimatze, but it was found, le Shaul u le Yochanan, but there was found with Saul and with Jonathan, his son. In other words, they had, Saul and Jonathan had weapons. No one else did. So they had, the other guys had sticks and stones, I guess. All right. So notice the situation is pretty oppressive for Israel. The Philistines had de-armed Israel. All right. Vayetze Matzav Pelishtim, and the garrison of the Philistines, Matzav, the garrison of the Philistines, went out to the Ma'avar Mikmash, to the crossing over of the Mikmash, to the crossing over to Mikmash, the crossing place. All right. So the battle scene is kind of set as we're going on. So notice here, this is kind of introduction to who's coming onto the scene? David. Very interesting. All right. We'll stop there for today. Does anyone have any questions about chapter 13? All right. All right, good. Thank you very much. Have a good day.